For our Universal Time, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Obama apologizes for the accidental U.S. attack on an Afghan hospital. President Obama Wednesday called the head of Doctors Without Borders, Joanne Liu, to apologize for the accidental U.S. bombing of its hospital in the embattled Afghan city Kunduz Saturday that killed 22. White House spokesman Josh Earnest was asked if the president discussed an independent probe of the bombing as put forth by the medical charity.
Well, I won't get into the details of what they discussed, but the president did reiterate his commitment. This is a commitment that we've offered up publicly, that the Department of Defense would conduct a transparent, thorough, and objective investigation. You've heard the president say, the United States, when we make a mistake, we're honest about it, we own up to it, we apologize where necessary, and we implement the kinds of changes that make it less likely that those kinds of mistakes will occur in the future.
Mr. Obama also called Afghan President Ashraf Ghani to voice his condolences for the innocent loss of life. Meanwhile, Doctors Without Borders Chief Executive Jason Cohn has called for an independent probe, dismissing previous claims the Taliban fighters were engaged in combat on hospital grounds.
None of our staff has reported to us that there was any fighting inside the compound. They reported that it was quiet before the strikes. That's what we have. That's why we need this independent investigation and it's on the burden of the United States and other forces to substantiate those claims. And we think the best way to do that is with an impartial investigative body.
The group said the bombing could be considered a war crime. At least one UN peacekeeper was killed, another wounded, when gunmen opened fire on a UN convoy north of the Central African Republic capital, Bangui, Tuesday. The dead soldier identified is from Burundi, serving with the UN MINUSCA force. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called for swift justice. This is VOA News. Russia has escalated its military involvement in Syria by the use of shipborne cruise missiles it says are aimed at Islamic State targets. Word of the strikes came as Syrian forces launched a major ground offensive against rebels in western Syria. U.S. spokesman John Kirby Wednesday challenged the Russian statement that the IS group is Moscow's primary target.
Nothing's changed about our message with respect to Russian military activity in Syria. If it's designed to go after ISIL, and if there's an opportunity there to talk about that, then we're willing to have that discussion. But if, and as we have seen by what they're hitting so far, it's really about going after opposition groups and bolstering the Assad regime, well, that's a different discussion altogether. And it's only going to make the conflict worse. It's only going to increase the violence. And it's going to do nothing but prolong what is already a very long, very bloody civil war.
U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter said in Rome Wednesday the U.S. is not cooperating with Russia in its fight against the IS group. Iran's top spiritual leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, has banned direct talks with the U.S. because of what he described as countless harm to Iran's interests. Addressing elite Revolutionary Guard commanders in Tehran, Khamenei said direct negotiations with Washington opened the way for U.S. penetration of the Islamic Republic. The senior Iranian cleric has not publicly endorsed Tehran's nuclear agreement with six international powers. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has warned Israelis to be on maximum alert for more violence and trouble after Palestinians carried out several knife attacks against Jews. A Palestinian woman stabbed an Israeli man who then shot and wounded her in Jerusalem's Old City. A suspected Palestinian militant stabbed an Israeli soldier in southern Israel before soldiers shot him dead. Another Palestinian stabbed an Israeli man at the entrance to a shopping mall. The Nobel Prize Committee in Stockholm has awarded this year's Nobel Prize in Chemistry to three scientists for their work on human DNA repair, which can be used in the treatment of cancer. The laureates include Thomas Lindahl of the Sir Francis Crick Institute and Claire Hall Laboratory in Britain, Paul Modrich of Duke University, and Aziz Sankar of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Sankar, originally from Turkey, said the key to success is hard work.
When I was a graduate student, I worked 18, 20 hours a day. And over the years, that's gone down some, but I still put in 12 hours a day. In doing research, there are many failures. And I think a secret in success in science is to keep at it and try new things.
The three scientists had their work lauded on how living cell functions and the cause of hereditary diseases, cancer development, and in aging. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The United Nations urges timely, credible elections in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
I'm, however, concerned by the increasing number of human rights violations related to the electoral process, particularly violations of freedom of peaceful assembly.
Martin Kobler is the top UN diplomat in the DRC. The East African Legislative Assembly urges peaceful, credible Tanzania election this month. Distrust is high as Guinea prepares for October 11th presidential election. And South Sudan rebel leader calls on President Salva Kiir to unequivocally embrace the peace process.
I would actually call on my brother Salva Kiir, the president, to drop these reservations so that our people in South Sudan wholeheartedly embrace the peace agreement.
The South Sudan rebel leader Riek Machar appearing Wednesday on VOA's Straight Talk Africa program. Getting ready to bring regular and low-cost electricity to Manu River Union countries in West Africa. And activists call for the release of a jailed Egyptian photojournalist. Those stories plus Marco Oman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The top UN diplomat in the Democratic Republic of Congo is urging the government to take all necessary measures to ensure national elections happen on time next year and are transparent, credible, and inclusive. VOA's Margaret Bashir has more from the United Nations.
In Martin Kobler's final briefing Wednesday to the UN Security Council, he said political tensions are running high ahead of the scheduled November 2016 legislative and presidential elections. He warned human rights violations are increasing, with more than 2,200 recorded violations this year, affecting more than 5,000 people. He said state agents committed half of these abuses.
I'm, however, concerned by the increasing number of human rights violations related to the electoral process, particularly violations of freedom of peaceful assembly. Reducing political space ahead of the elections will undermine the credibility of the electoral process.
Kobler has overseen the UN's 22,000-member peacekeeping force in Congo since August 2013. His tenure saw the rise and defeat of M23 rebels in the country's east and continued threats from the Rwandan Hutu rebel group, the FDLR, and the Ugandan Allied Democratic Forces, the ADF. The German diplomat said he leaves the mission with satisfaction, but concerned that fragile gains could be reversed. He urged the government to work with the United Nations on a gradual exit strategy for the peacekeeping mission, saying, "We cannot and must not exit hastily." Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
The East African Legislative Assembly, EALA, has called on Tanzania's Electoral Commission and political parties to ensure that the October 25th general election is peaceful, transparent, and credible. Bobby Odiko, spokesman for the legislative body, says beginning next week, EALA poll observer group will be dispatched to Tanzania to monitor the presidential, legislative, and local elections. Odiko tells reporter Peter Clotty that he expects the political campaign ahead of the elections to be peaceful.
The East African Legislative Assembly is meeting in Nairobi for the second meeting of the fourth session. We are aware that Tanzania is heading into its elections October 25th. The cycle essentially has begun in East Africa. So as organ in charge of legislation and oversight, we would like to see credible elections held in Tanzania and in the rest of the partner states. So it is on this basis that that call was made.
What role will EALA be playing in this election, specifically in Tanzania? Will it be in the term of cooperating with the Electoral Commission or your members overseeing or monitoring aspect of the election? What role will EALA be playing?
Well, let me say traditionally, EALA normally observes elections in the partner states, in the East African Community, and we shall be sending a team of observers who shall be heading into various parts of Tanzania beginning next week to look at the process itself of preparations for the elections, the elections on the main day itself, and how the thereafter, hopefully up to the time the results are released. And arising from that, the Assembly shall also prepare its own independent report, which then is brought to the House for debate.
As a signatory to the peace architecture in the East African region, Tanzania is a very significant player. However, there have been skirmishes of reports of violence, although it's not widespread. Do you think this call comes at an appropriate time?
Absolutely. I mean, Tanzania is generally a very, very peaceful country. And even if there have been reports of skirmishes which have been reported, these are few and far between. But definitely because of maybe rising tensions arising from the fact that the elections are nearing, and it's a hotly contested election. But we believe that all will go well and peace will be maintained, because that's what's important.
What will be EALA's message to the people of Tanzania ahead of the election itself, as campaign continues ahead of the election itself on October 25th?
Actually, the campaigns are almost at a home stretch. And our message as EALA is the fact that, first of all, the campaigns must be issue-oriented, and also the citizens themselves must exercise this whole process of election. I mean, it is their fundamental and constitutional right. So we are asking them to come out in numbers on the voting day, cast their votes peacefully, and then retreat later and wait for the results. We're also asking the media itself to not stir emotions, but they must report objectively about the whole process.
Bobby Odiko is the spokesman for the East African Legislative Assembly. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotte from Kenya's capital, Nairobi. Guinea is preparing for its second presidential election since returning to democracy in 2010. But as Chris Stein reports from Lagos, a new survey shows that many are distrustful of the election authorities.
Incumbent leader Alpha Conde is seeking a second term in Sunday's election. His main challenger is former Prime Minister Selu Daline Diallo, who ran against Conde in the 2010 vote and lost. During his 2010 campaign, Diallo accused Guinea's election authority, the National Independent Electoral Commission, of bias. A new survey from research firm Afrobarometer shows that suspicion has lived on. 28% of Guineans surveyed said they did not trust the CENI, as the commission is known. About 34% said they had a lot of trust, with the rest of respondents falling somewhere in between. Senior analyst Vincent Fouché of the International Crisis Group says the lack of trust in the CENI could lead to an election dispute.
The side that loses basically will not trust the results.
Conde took office in 2010, promising change in a country that has gone through decades of often brutal dictatorship, and where the World Bank says more than half of the population lives in poverty. More than 50 people were killed in the run-up to legislative elections held in 2013. The past weeks have seen a repeat of the violence. Last weekend, more than 80 people were injured in fighting between supporters of the rival candidates in the southeastern city of Nzérékor. In the capital, Conakry, political analyst and economics professor Alpha Koita says people are ready to vote. Some people have already received their voter cards, Koita says, including himself. The country is ready for elections, he says. But not everyone believes that. During the past week, the opposition has repeatedly called for the CENI to postpone the vote, saying there are irregularities in preparations for the polls. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
The leader of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, SPLM, in opposition, says President Salva Kiir should drop his reservations about the recent peace agreement so that the people of South Sudan will embrace the process. Speaking Wednesday in our Washington studio to Shaka Sali of VOA Straight Talk Africa program, Riek Machar also criticized President Kiir for unilaterally creating new states.
I'm so concerned about his constant statement on the reservations. I would actually call on my brother, Salva Kiir, the president, to drop these reservations so that our people in South Sudan wholeheartedly embrace the peace agreement. It has not met our minimum, but we have told the whole world that this peace agreement, we can live with it, we can restore peace, we can restore stability to South Sudan. And I think President Salva Kiir should drop these reservations so that we move forward to implementation of the peace agreement. I think because of his statement that he has reservations, he's now, for example, acting unilaterally, declaring 28 states. This is a unilateral action.
But what about some of your critics, Riek Machar, who also say you pretty much did the same thing last year without, in fact, consultations, and therefore they find it very difficult to believe, frankly, that you have the moral or ideological justification to condemn or criticize President Salva Kiir for doing the same thing.
I am criticizing President Salva Kiir for taking a unilateral action. I am not criticizing him for the number of states. I said he took a unilateral action when he knows very well that during the negotiations before IGAD, he refused the 21 states. He maintained the 10 states. He allowed IGAD to confirm the 10 states. They threw out our suggestion of 21 states. So it is not the numbers that we are criticizing. It is the principle of acting unilaterally, violating the peace agreement. We criticize the 28 states on the basis that they will fuel a new conflict, borders conflict. The 28 states have no basis. The 21 states which we declare are based on the former British colonial districts, which had borders delineated, demarcated.
Riek Machar is the leader of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, SPLM, in opposition. He was speaking Wednesday in our Washington studio with Chaka Saleh of VOA's Straight Talk television program. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 8th. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. President Robert Mugabe is the second most trusted person in the country, according to a new national survey released on Wednesday. Religious leaders are the most trusted people in Zimbabwe, according to the socioeconomic and political survey conducted by the Mass Public Opinion Institute. 62% of those polled in Zimbabwe's 10 provinces say they trust Mr. Mugabe and would vote for him if fresh elections were held today. Erwin Chifera has details from Harare.
Conducted between 8 and 16 July this year, the survey, which polled 1,200 adult Zimbabweans face-to-face, also showed that a majority of Zimbabweans also trust traditional leaders, parliament, and their local government councils, while trust was low for the police, the Zimbabwe Revenue Authority, and the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission. Support for the opposition political parties was also low, with 52% saying they did not trust the opposition and its leaders. Morgan Tsvangirai, the founding president of the Movement for Democratic Change, is the third most trusted person in the country, with the former deputy president Joyce Mujuru coming in fourth. Tendai Biti of the People's Democratic Party was fifth, and Simba Makoni of the Don Kusile sixth. But despite showing support for Mr. Mugabe, a majority of Zimbabweans at 67% said the country is going in the wrong direction, and 90% said they feared criticizing the president, ZANU-PF, the police, or the army. For some struggling Zimbabweans like Vivit Gwede, who attended the event where the survey results were released, the results are puzzling.
I think the findings reveal a very complex situation, where they are saying that the country is going the wrong direction, corruption is rising, but they went on to say that they trust the same, you know, leadership that is presiding over such a situation.
He adds the findings are confusing, especially since President Mugabe is the leader of the country and has failed to steer the ship from troubled waters as the economy continues to slide on his watch. Gwede said, "It appears those polled, for some reason, are not linking their suffering to Mr. Mugabe's leadership." Political commentator Fortune Gwazi said the research findings are not surprising, given that ZANU-PF owns the means of production and survival in the country.
The economic recession is increasing the patron-client relations between the electorate and ZANU-PF, hence the high levels of trust that the people have in the president.
The latest findings are not very different from previous Mass Public Opinion Institute surveys, which have seen Mr. Mugabe lead his opponents in popularity contest. The other key findings of the survey were that 53% of adult Zimbabweans did not have a job that pays cash income, and that 81% say the informal sector is sustaining the country's economy and should be maintained. Reporting from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The African Development Bank says Africa's power supply has worsened into a crisis. The bank says one African in five has access to electricity, and if the trend continues, fewer than 40% of African countries will reach universal access to electricity by 2050. In 1999, the West African Power Pool was created to provide electricity to the sub-region at competitive and affordable prices. In 2012, Cote d'Ivoire, Liberia, Sierra Leone and Guinea, CLSG, signed a treaty establishing a special-purpose company called Transco CLSG to develop and bring low-cost electricity supply to the four West African countries. Mohamed Shuarif, general manager of Transco CLSG, said the project will become operational in early 2017, with Cote d'Ivoire providing 83 megawatts initially.
This project came into being in 2012. The four head of states of Cote d'Ivoire, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea signed an international treaty committing themselves to interconnect themselves. Cote d'Ivoire has excess electricity. They are willing to initially supply 83 megawatts. Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, they are in demand of electricity. So to facilitate that, the World Bank, the African Development Bank, European Investment Bank, and the German Bank decided to pool resources together to finance this project, nearly $500 million, so that to create a vehicle linking Cote d'Ivoire with Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. So the stretch is about 1,300 kilometers. Transco CLSG is the company that is responsible to manage this project. Now, on the project implementation front, we have steering committee consists of the four ministers of energy for Cote d'Ivoire, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea.
When would this project become a reality?
This project will become a reality beginning in early 2017. The way it is, currently we are in our procurement process, which is actually the difficult part. Hopefully, beginning 2016 in May, we will start to award contracts to contractors.
Each country has its own state-run power entity. Will you be selling your electricity, and how would that compare, you know, with the power supply that the individual countries have right now? In other words, will your power supply be competitive enough or cheaper so that the ordinary person can afford it?
In the first place, the shareholders of my company are the heads of individual utilities in the four countries. Say, for instance, the head of LEC is member on the board. LEC has a share. So we are there to facilitate between buyers and seller. We are a transmission company. We transmit the electricity. We don't produce it. So what we do, we identify cheap electricity, transmit it to those that are in need. Now, on the aspect of the cost, we believe that once we conclude this line, the electricity that will be transmitted will be far cheaper. Our projection is basically saying that will be 60 to 70% cheaper to what it is today.
Where would you get your power supply? I mean, what's the source of your electricity? Would that be hydro, power plant? Where would you be getting your electricity?
Good. Initially, Africa has decided to supply 83 megawatts, but I want to first state that the capacity of our line, double circuit, the capacity of the double circuit, 486 megawatts. But we will equip one circuit first. And Africa has promised, they have committed to supply 83 megawatts initially. The first supply will come. And this will come from a mix of hydro generation as well as gas turbine.
Mohamed Shuarif is general manager of Transco CLSG, the company put together to bring unimpeded and affordable electricity to Manu River Union countries. He was speaking with me from Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire. After Egypt freed imprisoned Al Jazeera journalist and others late last month, President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi said his country now enjoys unprecedented freedom of expression. But activists say some journalists remain locked up, including Mahmoud Abu Zeir, also known as Sharkan, a photographer who has been jailed for more than 2 years. Viewers Heather Murdoch reports from Cairo.
After some journalists were released in late September, many others in Egypt were relieved, hoping their jobs would soon become safer. But for the family of Mahmoud Abu Zeid, or Shokin, a photographer who documented recent historical events in Egypt for several media houses, including Time magazine and Demotics, it was a major disappointment.
When I didn't see Shokin's name among them, I was deeply saddened. I was so sad I could not believe it. It was difficult for me to accept the news.
Shokin was arrested in August 2013, but just last month, his trial date was finally set for December. While he waits, his family says his health is rapidly deteriorating.
His face is paler every time we visit. His sight is failing, and he can't sleep from depression and sadness. These and many other factors have led to his failing physical and psychological health.
Shokin was arrested in a sweep of protesters and journalists after covering the Rabaa protest camp. The protest was in support of ousted Muslim Brotherhood president Mohamed Morsi, who is now in jail sentenced to death. It lasted more than a month and ended in clashes where hundreds were killed. Egyptian journalists don't generally contest the government's assertion that the Muslim Brotherhood is a terrorist organization. But they say covering the organization does not make one a member. Heather Murdock, VOA News, Cairo.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouman in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with basketball. Burundi's Berco Stars pipped Kenyan defending champions United States International University 73-70 in a women's match at the Africa Zone 5 Club Basketball Championships in Kigali, Rwanda on Wednesday. Uganda's Kampala City Council Authority outwitted Tanzania's Don Bosco 15-39, while in an all-Rwanda encounter, Ubumwe beat the military side APR 63-58. In the men's contest, Kenya Port Authority outwitted Rwanda's CSK 83-63. Egypt's Gezira beat South Sudan's National Engineering and Logistics 93-50, and Uganda's Oilers outplayed Kenya's Ulinzi 82-63. Staying in Kigali, in the men's contest, Tanzania's Savio face Uganda's City Oilers, Burundi's Dynamos play Kenya's Ulinzi, Egypt's Gezira engage Uganda's Tiger, and South Sudan's National Engineering and Logistics engage Rwanda's CSK. In the women's matches, Burundi's Berco encounter Rwanda's APR, Tanzania's Don Bosco face Rwanda's Ubumwe, and Uganda's KCCA face Kenya's USIU. In rugby, South Africa outclassed the United States of America 64-0 in their last preliminary round tie at the Rugby World Cup in London, England on Wednesday. The emphatic victory elevates South Africa to 16 points at the head of Group B. Meanwhile, Georgia pipped Namibia 17-16 in a Group C encounter in Exeter. In football, Burundi pipped hosts Seychelles by a solitary goal in an Africa preliminary 2018 FIFA World Cup qualifier in Rocha Kaima on Wednesday. Lesotho held hosts Comoro Islands to a scoreless draw in Moroni. Tanzania beat Malawi 2-0 in Dar es Salaam, and Kenya outplayed hosts Mauritius 5-2 in Bellevue. Meanwhile, the tie between hosts South Sudan and Mauritania was abandoned in Juba on Wednesday owing to torrential rain, with the scores level at 1-1. Today, Thursday, the two sides resume action this morning. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Suicide bombers targeted a town in northeast Nigeria on Wednesday, killing at least 15 people. Nigeria's Emergency Management Agency says three bombers set off explosives in the town of Damaturu in Yobe State. That is it for this Thursday, October 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporter Peter Clotin, and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Ouman, I am James Barton, Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very good Thursday.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.